Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, November 4th, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, Education Decatur, Market Sustains Scholars' Brains. Millikan Food Pantry Relieves Students Facing Food Insecurity. And we have this article by Donette Beckett from Decatur. Originally from Chicago, Julian Keith has found Decatur is willing to help a college kid with hunger pangs. I don't make enough to where groceries are sustainable for a consistent amount of time, he said. Keith is a senior and an athlete at Millikan University, living in an apartment with a couple of roommates. Access to healthy food is often hard for him to find, he said. I try to eat two or three meals a day, he said, but it's just been one meal. Millikan has stepped up to help Keith and others in the same situation. Millikan students and staff can visit the new Millikan Market, the college's food pantry, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Fridays. A grab-and-go station will be available from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday with quick snacks or essentials. A Millikan identification is needed. Having this, I can come in and grab something and prepare for a full week, maybe two, Keith said. Millikan President Dean Pribinow addressed food insecurity issues among the university's students during the opening of the food pantry. University life for our college students presents lots of different challenges at different times, he said. Hunger and access to quality food should not be one of those challenges that they face. According to a United States Government Accountability Office report, approximately 3.8 million college students experienced food insecurity in 2020. Students who experience food insecurity are more likely to have lower grades and less likely to graduate compared to their peers, the report stated. Food insecure students are also more likely to report symptoms of depression and anxiety. The idea to open the Millikan Market came from Lori Cairns, Vice President for Athletics and Community Engagement. She saw the need to address food insecurity approximately 4 months ago after she helped a couple of students searching for food. She offered them what she had, yogurt and cheese sticks, with a quick appreciation from the students. I knew at that very moment that I was being called to do something about food insecurity on the Millikan campus, she said. The Big Blue Pantry was Millikan's previous food pantry, offering assistance to students and staff. According to the students, the choices were limited. This has a lot more options, Keith said about the Millikan Market. This is like a mini Walmart. Freshman students and others who live on campus have a meal plan allowing them access to the Millikan dining halls. The students who live off campus often choose their meal plan as Keith did. The students who live off campus often lose their meal plan as Keith did. It cost too much and was overriding my balance, he said. Bringing the Millikan Market to its new location at 1177 West Main Street came with assistance from those who know the service as well. The Northeast Community Fund and the United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois will help stock the shelves. The market also benefited from the recent WSOY Community Food Drive. Other community assistance included Tillamook that provided the freezers. Refreshment Services Pepsi supplied the refrigerators. The Millikan Market staff learned how to stock and prepare the pantry through the assistance of the Northeast Community Fund. According to Sharon Bunch, Assistant Director of Northeast Community Fund, supplying food for hungry college students is no different than feeding hungry families. Just because the students are attending a private college, Bunch noted, doesn't imply that they have access to limitless funds. Someone may have gotten a scholarship to come here, she said. That doesn't mean that they have the means and access to go to the grocery store to meet their food insecurity. The Millikan Market is also an opportunity for the students to see an example of community impact, the belief that access to healthy foods, dignity, and opportunities belongs to everyone, said Angel Lawrence, executive director of the Northeast Community Fund. Through the Millikan Market, we're breaking barriers and we're building bridges from the classroom to the community, from need to nourishment, from generosity to growth. The food and other items, including paper towels, toilet paper, and toothpaste, as well as cooking utensils, are free to the students and employees. What we want to do is take away the worry about food insecurity in any way from the students who are trying to do their very best. They're here earning a Millikan education, Karen said. And let's see some sidebars here. The first one is Millikan Market. Information for donations to the Millikan Market, the college's food pantry, can be found at Millikan Market at millikan.edu. Opportunities include financial and food donations, as well as ways to volunteer, are available. And sidebar, hashtag Together Decatur. Do you know a person or of a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur? Well, if you do, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or dbeckett at herald-review.com. And there is a medium-sized color photo here. I'll read the caption. Lori Cairns, Vice President for Athletics and Community Engagement, stands in the staging area of the Millikan Market where donated items are separated and stored. And Cairns is standing off to the left corner of the photo with her Millikan blue apparel on. And then, but right behind her, on the left side of the photo, going through, reaching almost to the other side, are four Pepsi refrigerated coolers. And then on the end of that is the freezer that was donated by Tillamook. And there appears to be a chest freezer as well. The walls are unfinished, so it looks like it's still a work in progress. Donette Beckett, Herald and Review, photo credit. Large color photo that leads off the article. Millikan University senior Julian Keith studies the options Friday, October 31st in the grab-and-go section of the new Millikan Market. And this area appears to be a little more finished and complete. Keith is wearing his Millikan apparel, and he's seated at a desk, and he's reaching over with his right hand, and he has his hand on a Starkist lunch to go packet. There's also hamburger helper staged on a desk, mac and cheese, Chef Boyardee, canned pastas, jarred pasta sauces, some canned veggies, and looks like a microwave and a mini fridge under the table. Donette Beckett, Herald and Review photos. Wow. And then the final photo, Millikan Market, the university's newest food pantry, offers a wide selection of food items. And this is a walk-in multi-shelf. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shelves, all stocked with a variety of items. And it looks like cooking utensils as well. Government shutdown on track for record streak. Trump says he won't be extorted by Dems as impasse near his sixth week. Mary Clark Jelinek, Associated Press, Washington. The government shutdown is poised to become the longest ever this week as the impasse between Democrats and Republicans dragged into a new month. Millions of people stand to lose food aid benefits. Healthcare subsidies are set to expire, and there are a few real talks between the parties over how to end it. President Donald Trump said in an interview aired on Sunday that he won't be extorted by Democrats who are demanding negotiations to extend the expiring Affordable Care Act subsidies. Echoing congressional Republicans, the president said on CBS's 60 Minutes, he'll negotiate only when the government is reopened. Trump said Democrats have lost their way and predicted they'll capitulate to Republicans. I think they have to, Trump said, and if they don't vote, it's their problem. Trump's comments signal the shutdown could drag on for some time as federal workers, including air traffic controllers, are set to miss additional paychecks, and there's uncertainty over whether 42 million Americans who receive federal food aid will be able to access the assistance. Senate Democrats voted 13 times against reopening the government, insisting they need Trump and Republicans to negotiate with them first. The president also reiterated his pleas to Republican leaders to change Senate rules and scrap the filibuster. Senate Republicans repeatedly rejected that idea since Trump's first term, arguing the rule requiring 60 votes to overcome any objections in the Senate is vital to the institution and allowed them to stop Democratic policies when they're in the minority. Trump said that's true, but we're here right now. Republicans have to get tougher, Trump told CBS. If we end the filibuster, we can do exactly what we want. With the two parties at a standstill, the shutdown now in its 34th day, and approaching its sixth week appears likely to become the longest in history. The previous record was set in 2019, when Trump demanded Congress give him money for a U.S.-Mexico border wall. A potentially decisive week, Trump's push on the filibuster could prove a distraction for Senate Majority Leader John Thune, Republican, South Dakota, and Republican senators who've opted instead to stay the course as the consequences of the shutdown become more acute. Republicans hope at least some Democrats will eventually switch their votes, as moderators have been in weeks-long talks with the rank-and-file Republicans about potential compromises that could guarantee votes on health care in exchange for reopening the government. Republicans need 5 additional Democrats to pass their bill. Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, a Democrat, said on ABC's This Week on Sunday, "There's a group of people talking about a path to fix the health care debacle and a commitment from Republicans not to fire more federal workers. But it's unclear if those talks could produce a meaningful compromise." Obamacare subsidies. Trump said in the 60 Minutes interview that the Affordable Care Act, often known as Obamacare, because it was signed and championed by then-President Barack Obama, is terrible, and if the Democrats vote to reopen the government, we will work on fixing the bad health care that we have right now. Democrats feel differently, arguing that the marketplaces set up by the ACA are working, as record numbers of Americans signed up for the coverage. They want to extend subsidies first enacted during the COVID-19 pandemic so premiums won't go up for millions of people on January 1st. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer said last week that we want to sit down with Thune, with House Speaker Mike Johnson, with Trump, and negotiate a way to address this horrible health care crisis. No appetite for bipartisanship. As Democrats pushed Trump and Republicans to negotiate, Trump showed little interest in doing so. He called for an end to the Senate filibuster after a trip to Asia while the government was shut down. A spokesman for Thune said Friday that his position hasn't changed, and Johnson said Sunday that he believes the filibuster has traditionally been a safeguard from far-left policies. Trump said on 60 Minutes that he likes Thune, but I disagree with him on this point. The president has spent much of the shutdown mocking Democrats, posting videos of House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries in a Mexican sombrero. The White House website is now featuring a satirical MySpace page for Democrats, a parody based on the social media site that was popular in the early 2000s. Democrats repeatedly said they need Trump to get serious and weigh in. Virginia Senator Mark Warner said that he hopes the shutdown could end this week because Trump is back in Washington. Republicans can't move on anything without a Trump sign-off, Warner said on Face the Nation on CBS. The 35-day shutdown that lasted from December 2018 to January 2019 ended when Trump retreated from his demands over a border wall. That came amid intensifying delays at the nation's airports and multiple missed paydays for hundreds of thousands of federal workers. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said on ABC's This Week that there already have been delays at several airports and it's only going to get worse. Moving on to the local page, A2, Decatur firefighters' actions stop fire from spreading through home. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Actions from the Decatur Fire Department prevented a fire from spreading through a structure Sunday evening. According to a news release issued by Deputy Fire Chief Chris Downey, crews were dispatched at approximately 5:37 p.m. Sunday to 4047 North Constant View Drive after the report of a house fire. Upon arrival, fire crews observed heavy fire and smoke showing from a two-story home, Downey stated. The first company on scene attacked the area where the fire started. Additional companies conducted searches of the home, performed ventilation, established a continuous water supply. and secured utilities to the residents, Downey stated. Thanks to the quick response and coordinated efforts, the fire was contained before it could spread throughout the structure. No injuries were reported. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. Police, man shot in back. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. A Decatur man drove himself to the hospital in a car with two flat tires as he fled from an early morning shooting Sunday that left him with a serious bullet wound to his lower back, police report. Sergeant Brandon Rolfs with the Decatur Police Department said the 18-year-old victim had arrived at Decatur Memorial Hospital and was later transferred to a regional trauma center. Speaking late Sunday morning, Rolfs said the victim's condition was described as critical but stable. Patrol officers had been alerted to gunfire in the 1700 block of East Lawrence Street at 6:42 a.m. after getting multiple 911 calls from residents. Within minutes of arriving in the area, officers were told that a gunshot victim had just driven himself to the DMH emergency department. His vehicle had several bullet defects from the shooting and also two flat tires, Rolfs added. And in fact, one of those tires was worn all the way down to the rim as he drove to DMH. Rolfs said it wasn't clear if the victim had been targeted as he was driving his car or the shooting attack happened before he got into it to flee the scene. The sergeant said a house in the area had also been hit by gunfire, and officers had recovered evidence that included a bullet casing and a bullet fragment. The victim's car is also being examined. Rolfs said the shooter was still being sought in what he described as an active investigation. Anyone with information can reach the police at 217-424-2734 or call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Public safety, police, driver pinned man to house. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. Police report that a long simmering neighbor dispute on a Decatur street turned violent when one man ended up pinned to the wall of his house by an SUV. The 51-year-old victim was not able to move until the male driver of the SUV backed away, leaving the victim with soreness, and he claimed a missing tooth. Sergeant Brandon Rolfs with the Decatur Police Department said the trouble broke out just before 8 a.m. Friday in the 700 block of West Cushing Street. He said the victim had had a series of clashes with the 36-year-old driver of the SUV, who is described as a frequent visitor to the house next door to the victim's home. And as a result of previous police calls, both men are barred from trespassing on each other's property. Rolfs said Friday trouble started when the victim went outside to check on a problem with his dryer vent and saw the other man sitting in the SUV parked in the neighboring home's driveway. There was an exchange of profanities between these two men who don't care for each other, Rolfs added. Then the victim proceeded to walk toward the dryer vent on his house to check it. At this time, the suspect drove his vehicle forward onto the property of the victim over the grass and pinned the victim's body between the front driver's side bumper and the victim's house. And while pinned between the house and the SUV, the victim said he yelled and cursed multiple times and even pulled one of the windshield wipers off the suspect's vehicle. Rolf said the victim was only freed when the other man finally backed up before fleeing the scene. The sergeant said the tire marks supported the victim's version of events, and part of the incident was also captured on a surveillance camera. In the video, the SUV is seen driving towards the victim, and then you can hear the victim yelling, and then yelling in pain, said Rolfs. And then, all of a sudden, the SUV backs up and begins to drive away as the victim makes his way back into the view of the camera, still cussing at the suspect. Police continue their search for the SUV driver. Veterans invited to Mount Zion breakfast. Donette Beckett, Mount Zion, has this article. All local veterans and their guests are invited to a complimentary Veterans Day breakfast at 7 a.m. on Tuesday, November 11th at the Antioch Christian Church, 5409 East U.S. Route 36, Decatur. The event, hosted by the Mount Zion Chamber of Commerce, will honor those who have served the country. Featured speaker will be Jimmy Raid, retired Army National Guard Company 1st Sergeant with 20 years of service. The event also will have the Macon County Honor Guard, Mount Zion a cappella ensemble, and a roll call of armed services. Breakfast will include bacon, eggs, baked goods, coffee, orange juice, and water. Registration is required, or requested but not required. Repeat that. Registration is requested but not required. Register by November 7th by calling 217-864-2526. That's 217-864-2526, or visit mtzionchamber.org. Here's some fun news. Lainey Wilson named Illinois State Fair headliner Olivia Jacob Springfield. Country music singer Lainey Wilson has been announced as the first of many Illinois State Fair headliners for next year. Wilson will take the grandstand stage on Saturday, August 15th. The 2026 fair will run August 13th through 23rd at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. Wilson, on November 19th, will host the 2025 CMA Awards, where she is tied as the most nominated artist with 6 nominations, including Entertainer of the Year, Female Vocalist of the Year, Album of the Year, Singer, or Single of the Year, Song of the Year, and Music Video of the Year. She will also headline the Stagecoach Festival in 2026 and is featured on the 2025 Time 100 list, according to a news release. She recently released the deluxe version of her award-winning album Whirlwind, featuring 5 additional tracks, and the single Somewhere Over Laredo, which is currently in the top 10 on country radio. She has earned 8 number one hits, including 4x4 by You, Watermelon Moonshine, and the double platinum Heart Like a Truck, as well as collaborations Save Me with Jelly Roll and Wait in the Truck with Hardy. She also wrote and recorded the song Out of Oklahoma for the Twisters movie. Additionally, Wilson has collaborated with Reba McEntire, Miranda Lambert, Dolly Parton, and Post Malone. She is set to make her film acting debut in 2026's adaptation of Colleen Hoover's Reminders of Him. She has previously appeared in Yellowstone. Wilson is now on her sold-out Whirlwind World Tour, spanning Europe and North America, and recently launched her 4th collection with Wrangler as well as her own boot and jewelry lines, Golden West Boots, and the Lainey Wilson Jewelry Collection. Tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 8th via Ticketmaster. Tickets range from $88 to $168, and $30 pre-show party tickets will be available as an upgrade. It's an interesting article on the weather page. Typhoon wreaks havoc on archaeological site. This article is by Becky Borer, Associated Press, Juneau, Alaska. A fragment of a mask that was preserved for hundreds of years in permafrost sat in the muck of a low tide in the western Alaska community of Quinghagak. Wooden spoons, toys, a fishing lure, and other artifacts were strewn in some cases for miles along the beach. The Yupik community near the edge of the Bering Sea was spared the widespread devastation wrought by the remnants of Typhoon Halong on its neighbors farther west earlier this month, but it suffered a different kind of blow. The lashing winds and storm surge devoured dozens of feet of shoreline, disrupting a culturally significant archaeological site and washing away possibly thousands of unearthed artifacts. About 1,000 pieces, including the wooden masks and tools, were recovered in Quinghagak after the storm ravaged parts of southwest Alaska on October 11th and 12th. But many more pieces, perhaps up to 100,000, were left scattered, said Rick Connect, an archaeologist, who has worked on the Nunalak, or Old Village Project, for 17 years. That's roughly the number of pieces previously recovered from the archaeological site. Meanwhile, freezing temperatures and ice have settled into the region, stalling immediate efforts to find and recover more displaced artifacts on searches done by four-wheeler and on foot. Connect called what happened a major loss. The site has yielded the world's largest collection of pre-contact Yupik artifacts. Much of what's known about the Yupik life before outsiders arrived stems from the project, said Connect, an emeritus senior lecturer in archaeology at University of Aberdeen in Scotland. When there are holes or disturbances in the site, it's like trying to read a book with holes in the pages. You're going to miss a few things, he said, and the bigger those holes are, the weaker the story gets. There are a few holes in the book right now. While the name of the original village isn't known, it was attacked by another village and burned around 1650, he said. Connect has worked with elders and other Quinhagak to combine their traditional knowledge with the technology and techniques used by the archaeology teams to study the past together. Quinhagak has about 800 residents and subsistence food gathering is critically important to them. The storm-dispersed artifacts from a site long preserved by permafrost, Connect said. A long-standing concern has been the threat that climate change, melting permafrost, coastal erosion, and potential for more frequent or stronger storms has posed to the site, he said. It poses risks to the community itself. Erosion threatens major infrastructure in Quinhagak, including a sewage lagoon, homes, and fish camps. Thawing permafrost is also unsettling and undermining buildings, according to a 2024 report from the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. The excavation project itself began after artifacts began appearing on the beach around 2007. Part of the site that washed out had been excavated previously. There was a big chunk where we'd only gone about halfway down and left it for later because we prioritized parts of that site that were most at risk from the marine erosion, Connect said. When he left in July, there was a roughly 30-foot buffer to the sea. The storm took out the buffer and another 30 feet of the site, he said. It also left what Connect described as piano-sized clumps of tundra on the tidal flats. Connect didn't recognize the site at first after how long. I just drove right by it because all the landmarks I'm used to on the beach and at the site were gone or changed, he said. Work to preserve the rescued artifacts has included soaking the marine salts from the wood and placing the pieces in special chemicals that will help them hold together when they dry out, he said. If one were to just take one of the wooden artifacts off the beach and let them dry, they'd crack to pieces, sometimes in a matter of hours. There is a lab at the museum in Quinhagak where the artifacts are kept. Archaeologists hope to return to the site next spring for a rescue excavation of layers exposed by the storm, he said. In some ways, it feels like when teams saw the site in 2009. We've got this raw site with artifacts popping off in every way, he said. So we're starting from scratch. And a quick review of the photos here. Photo shows various tools, utensils, and other artifacts that were uncovered. Richard Arden Connect, photo credit. Wooden mask was found washed away from a culturally significant Yupik archaeological site. And it's face up with its back in the sand or the beach, and it looks like it has a smile and two eye slits and a very long nose. And Richard Arden Connect, photo credit. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, November 4th, 2025. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.